I'm going to just start by, I know a few of you I know and recognize, some of you I don't know, so let me just tell you a tiny bit about myself. I've been at Church the Rock now. I'm one of the senior pastors here. I've been at Church the Rock here for 22 years. I have been married for 28 years. That means I got married when I was 12. I have two kids, and my daughter is in her master's degree. My son just is in his first year university, so that's a whole new stage of life for us. And at Church the Rock, when I started here, I was the youth pastor. I've been 22 years. I was a youth pastor at Church of the Rock for 5 years. It became obvious, both to the church and to me, it was sort of a new thing, that I actually had quite a bit of administrative ability and strengths, and I was kind of geared that way. I didn't know that. I discovered that about myself. And so I got involved in a lot of the operations of the church and ended up overseeing all those things. And plus, I'm a nerd, and so I do tech stuff. That's why I was interested in what you were talking about. And I know enough. I always tell people I know enough to be dangerous in tech. I don't know all of it, but I know enough to make a mess of things. And then I became part of the senior pastoral team, and now more recently I'm overseeing missions and the prophetic in our church as well. And so I have a lot of hats that I wear, and I want to start by telling you a bit about, before we get into this session a little bit, I want to tell you a little bit about a personal situation I think is going to relate to what we're going to talk about. And just as a, you know, something up front, I'm just going to let you know this is going to make me look really stupid because I made some really poor choices, but I am smart in other things, so just don't judge me based on this whole thing. And so a few years ago, we purchased a lake property. It's sort of a new thing for us. It was a real fixer-upper. It's got a lot of work. We will have a lot of work to do for years to come. But one of the things that I had to do is I had to cut down this tree, which I've never cut down a tree before. I've cut down little trees, but never, this one's a bigger tree. It was like a foot and a half. And the one of the things that happened with this cabin is that it came with a bunch of tools and old tools, old chainsaw, an old axe, you know, those big like lumberjack type things that you see on TV with a blade across it. It came with one of those. And in my mind, we were going up for 2 days and I had a whole bunch of projects we were going to get done. And in my mind, well, how hard can it be to cut down a tree? And so we're just going to go there, cut down this tree. And, you know, one of these tools has got to work. And the chainsaw didn't work. And so then I have a reciprocating saw, which, you know, the blade didn't even go all the way through it. And so I spent hours and hours trying to cut through this stupid tree, waiting for it to fall. It was a bad plan. It wasn't working, and at one point I got fed up, and I thought, okay, there's got to be a better way to do this. And so then I went and found the old metal, like lumberjack kind of whatever, and tried to use it. Well, it was like rusty as anything and all flimsy. It didn't do anything. And I found the old axe, and I took the axe and came big whack against the tree, and it basically bounced off the tree. It made a little dent. It didn't do anything. And I was like, I'm stuck here. I had nothing. So I just kept going at it with the sawzall for hours and hours and hours. And so finally the stupid thing fell. And then came the second part of my dilemma. In my mind, I thought, you know, I know it's heavy, but it's on the ground. I can drag it up into the place that I want. But the thing is like really heavy. It's not, it does, you know, you're not dragging this thing. And so I tried to drag this tree. I couldn't even move it. And so then I realized, now I have to actually cut it some more with this stupid reciprocating saw and try to cut this thing. The only thing that worked in my favor in this port was that it was farther down the tree, so of course it's not as thick, and all the weight is not sitting on it anymore because it's fell and it's on the ground, and so that made that part easier. And so it ended up being this incredibly huge job that took us almost like the full time we were there, and we didn't get anything else done that we were supposed to get done because of this situation that I was in and because of what I was, the tools that I was using. And I think when it comes to the I'm going to call it the business of running the church and doing these things and running the different ministries that we run, I think we get caught in this kind of scenario all the time where we don't have the right tools or we haven't thought it all the way through. And there are smarter ways to do things, but we get stuck doing just sort of what we know or what is at our disposal or these different things. And this we make these choices sometimes that are more focused on the short term and just, okay, well, how do I just get through this thing instead of actually trying to take a step back, look at the bigger picture. And there's a verse that I think fits perfectly with this situation. It's in Ecclesiastes 10:10, and it's describing exactly what I was doing. It says, using a dull axe requires great strength, so sharpen the blade. That's the value of wisdom. It helps you to succeed. And this is, of course, Solomon, and he's giving us wisdom. And basically, this is a work smarter, not harder passage. That's what Solomon's telling us to do. He's saying, sharpen the axe and use your tools properly. And I think in this whole thing, this is what we struggle with at times. It's definitely what I struggled with there. If I had taken the time to sharpen the axe or one of those things, it would have worked way better. But I was in too much of a rush to get the job done. And so there's two words that we really throw around a lot, I think, when it comes to this process in administration and stuff, and it's systems and administration. We're going to talk about systems in a minute, but I want to start by talking about administration a little bit. Because I think there's a few important things to recognize about this before we get into how we supercharge our systems and how we get there. And so just to ensure we're talking about the same thing, administration is the process or the activity of running a business or an organization or a ministry. That's the process of it. And every area of ministry I've ever worked in, there's always been a bit of a tension between the ministry side of things and the administration side of things. And it's always there. There's this sort of tension, and I don't actually think it's necessarily a bad thing. I think it actually can be a good thing, but it also can be a bad thing. And both of those things happen. And what happens is the more ministry-minded people can feel like administration just slows them down. And they feel like, oh, I got to fill out another form. I have to jump through this hoop. And there's all these steps. And the ministry-minded people just want to get the job done. They want to go do ministry. They want to be able to accomplish the things. And they feel this frustration with the more administrative-minded people because they're trying to do it from a different perspective. And sometimes it even, in the unhealthy environments, becomes even a power struggle. And there's this little bit of this power struggle where the ministry-minded people feel like, they're just making me do this so that they get to dictate what's going on. And so there can be this, sometimes these really unhealthy environments. And of course, the larger the organization or ministry or thing that you're involved in, the more moving parts there are and the more it necessitates an administration to keep things flowing together and keep things moving and so that we try to not create a big mess, because that's what happens without administration. We have this huge mess and we get into trouble. And so this becomes the tension. And for the ministry-minded people, they sometimes even get to despise. I've seen it. They get to despise the administration. They despise these things. And it's just the way it is. But for the other way, for the administrative-minded people, they need to know, they struggle too. And sometimes because of that lack of appreciation, because of that frustration, it actually impacts them and it frustrates them as well. And so there's this tension that happens. And for whatever reason, whether you call me a freak of nature or personality disorder or whatever you want to call me, for some reason, I find myself in both of these camps. I find myself very administratively minded, but also very ministry focused. And I don't know a lot of people like me. I'm sure there's other personality disorder peoples out there as well. But I get caught in both of these things, and I find myself frustrated on both sides of the equation. I've been doing the ministry side of things, and I'm so frustrated at times with the administration, the hoops that I have to jump through. And I've been on the other side of it where I'm on the administrative side of it, and I'm frustrated with the ministry people. And guys, don't you get this? I'm trying to help you, and I'm trying to make this thing work for you. And to be honest with you, the worst part for me is when I get frustrated with processes that I created. Because that has happened too many times. And I'll be in the ministry thing and I'll be going, okay, I want to do this. And I'm like, oh, I got to do this form or I got to do this thing. Oh, wait a minute, that was my idea. And now I'm in this situation. And so I get stuck in these things. And so I feel like I understand both sides. And I feel like there's this tension, this balance that needs to happen. But it's a journey to get there. And my first missions trip to Uganda was a real eye-opening experience for me. And our trips used to be, before I started leading them, used to be very ministry focus driven, which would make sense, right? That's the whole point. We're there to do ministry and to do missions. And it was really lacking in some administrative structure. And so what happened for me, it's a longer story that I could tell you some other time, I guess, but it was a very stressful, this was my first one. I was super anxious about it. A whole bunch of challenging things were coming up and that I had to deal with. But one of the parts that was really weighing on me is the whole money situation. And because what we used to do at the time is we carried $20,000 US cash with me and we would exchange it when we got there. And that was the process because we got a tiny bit better exchange rate. It was actually the weirdest thing. I don't know if anyone's ever done this in foreign countries, but they went to the bank with the 20 and he started negotiating his exchange rate with, and I'm thinking, you don't really do that here. You don't get to negotiate your exchange rate. But the guy that we were working with was doing that and he was able to negotiate a better rate. And so then 20,000 US cash, which was already stressful enough to carry, ended up being 75 million shillings, which was wads and wads. My whole backpack was full of, like, I could, you know, you see in the movies and they stack all the bills up and you got this big mound. This is the thing. And I'm like super stressed about this. And I'm walking to the bank with this backpack of money and trying to deal with this whole scenario. But I understand that when I get back, I am accountable for everything that's spent. And so I need receipts for everything. And when you're in the middle of doing ministry and all this stuff, that's challenging. Because there's all the stuff that's happening all the time and you have these different things going on and you're trying to keep everything together and, you know, trying to catch receipts and do all the stuff. And so then at the end of the whole trip, after, you know, I was stressed about it the whole time, I sat down with the guy that we work with. Some of you know Moses. Has anyone ever been to Uganda? No? Okay. And I sat down with him and we're trying to balance the whole budget and it took us hours and hours and we could not balance it. We couldn't figure it out. And I was, you know, all this stuff. And so then I came back to this, you know, to Winnipeg and we kind of figured out some of it the best that we could. And I thought, I am never doing that again. I am never going to have this kind of loosey-goosey, non-administrative, like that was driving, it just was way too much stress. And of course, the accounting department struggles with it too, because now I'm bringing this mess back to them and they have to figure it out. And so, because I'm a nerd and I'm good with stuff like this, I created this spreadsheet that was sort of sophisticated, complicated spreadsheet where what I could do is I had the whole budget on the spreadsheet and I stopped carrying the cash with me too. We send it now electronically and then I would create the spreadsheet. So every day at the end of the, because I still have to have money in my backpack, where every day I would come out and I'd come back to the hotel at the end of the evening and I would pull out the wads of cash and I would just have to total the amount of wads and I could punch that into the spreadsheet and I enter in the few receipts I did that day and the whole thing would balance and it would tell me, you know, within just a few minutes of work, I could see, yep, I'm all good, I've balanced, or I've missed something. And then all I have to think about is, okay, what did I spend today that I didn't? And so I created this process to do that. And of course, the accounting department loved me for it because, you know, normally trips came back and made a big mess for them, and now it's done. Like, you know, I handed them a thumb drive with the spreadsheet on it, and everything was done and calculated. But here was the challenge. So what I tried to do was institute that for the other trips that we were going. And I said, hey guys, this is actually going to save you a bunch of work. And it helps our team out too. Because, you know, what happens when you don't have all the receipts is the accounting department is going back to the missions team and saying, hey, we need this, this, and this. And so now then they're contacting the people on the field and they're going, hey, can you send me this receipt? And then they, of course, send you the wrong receipt. And then you go, no, that's not the one I need. I need this one. And you've been a part of these kinds of things. And so I'm trying to explain to them that this is going to help you. This is a good thing. This is going to make you have less work, not more. And I got resistance from it. No, they didn't want to do it because it's not the way they've done it before. And it's not this process. And so there's this tension that happens over and over again in these camps. And I understand, you know, when you're there, when you're doing ministry, you don't actually want to worry about administration. I get that. That's challenging. But you pay for it later. And I learned this valuable lesson, actually, when I was doing a renovation project on my house. Actually, Chuck was actually helping me. You need me to down? Okay. Chuck that's back there was actually helping me with this thing, with this project a little bit. And it was a big project at my house, and it took months and months and months to deal with it. And so what you start doing when you get into a bigger project is you start making choices to go, you know what, this is good enough. And you start going, I know I really wanted that, but if I run the wire this way, it would be better, but it's going to take me an extra hour. This is good enough. I'm just going to do this. And so I made a bunch of choices like that because I was just tired. I was worn out from the whole process. But then what happens, of course, is in the years to come, I have all this regret about it because I'm thinking it was 1 hour. Why didn't I spend one extra hour and get this thing? And now, because there are things in my house now that I can't fix without spending a week to do, or I could have just spent an extra hour done it that day and it would have been fine. And so what I try to do is remind myself over and over, and I have to sometimes remind myself and push myself to say, what would my future self want in this decision? And do I want to make my future self happy, or do I want to make my future self mad at me? Or another expression that sometimes people use is give a gift to your future self. And so I try to constantly remind myself. Sometimes I'm not very happy that I'm reminding myself. Sometimes I'm like, I don't want to hear that right now, but this is what I'm trying to do because I remember what it cost me the last time, and I'm trying to do this thing. But I've been picking on the more ministry-minded people here so far, but let me just spread the love around a little bit and pick on the more administrative-minded people. I don't know if you, show of hands here, who's the more ministry-minded people? Ministry-minded? Who are the more administrative? Okay, we're half and half. Okay, I want to pick on the other group. And I think one of the things that administrative people need to remember is that the administration serves the ministry, not the other way around. And I think we get caught in this trap over and over and over again. And we're going to focus more on that when we get into the systems. But the whole point of administration is to make the ministry more effective. That's the point. That's the purpose of it. It's to make it more effective. That's why we do what we do. And we should be constantly looking for ways to make the administration less burdensome on the ministry instead of the other way around. And we want to try to take care of as many of the administrative details as much as possible so they don't have to. That's the whole point and why we do these things. And many times what happens in settings is that the administration starts dictating how things should look and how things should be done. And they have their preferences. Well, I prefer it this way. And it really actually should be about the preference of the ministry. We're serving them. It's not us serving. It's not the other way around. Our job is to make the ministry more fruitful, not to make the ministry to make your job easier. That's actually not our goal. Our job is to make their job easier. And you know, I understand sometimes we have to say no because what they want to do doesn't work. I understand that. But the answer should always be, well, let me see if I can come up with a way to do that when the questions come. And then if we can't do it, it's no, because our goal needs to be to serve them. And our job is to serve, which of course means we're subservient to the purpose of ministry. And so we need to keep that in mind. So that's administration. Let me talk about systems where this is where I think we're going to spend the rest of our time. And a system is a set of things or principles or procedures that work together as a part or a mechanism of an interconnected network. And so we all use these things. How we get some things done. When I talked about that spreadsheet in Uganda that I did, I created a system. That's what I did there, is I created a way so that I could be able to do this in a more simple way without having to be all this work. I did a bunch of work up front and made a process and made an investment in the long-term thing for me. And we still do that today. And now it's a requirement actually for all of our teams to do a form of that when we go. And so we all have systems, but that doesn't mean all our systems are good systems. And it doesn't mean they're at least not as effective as they could be. And many times I think we get caught just doing the thing ways that we've always done them. And systems sometimes can just be busy work. Sometimes they're just busy work. They times change, the way we do things needs to change, technology changes, our processes change, all kinds of things can happen and change, and so we need to adjust with it. And I want to tell you about an organization I run called World Focus, when Pastor Keith was here, before he passed away, some of you would know him, he passed away a few years ago, he ran an organization called World Focus, and a bunch of our missions focus doesn't go through the church. It actually goes through this other separate organization, which is a story for another day. And so when he passed away, I took it over. And I loved Pastor Keith dearly. He was a dear friend. He invested tons in my life. I'm not being critical of him. But this was not his strength. And he knew that. That's why he had me around, actually. He had me around in these things because it's more my strength than his. And so when he passed away, then I needed to take over this organization called World Focus, but it was a bit of a disaster. Not disaster is too strong of a word, but it was just a mess. It was a mess in the way the systems and the administration. But here was my challenge. And for those of you who know me, you know this is true. I have way too many hats that I wear at the church. I oversee the missions. I oversee the prophetic. I'm part of a campus in Niverville. I do the operations. I have way, 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 way too many things going. I do not have time to have to do a whole bunch of work to run this organization. And so when I took it over, what I did is I actually spent a whole summer. I kind of killed myself for 2 months, and I reinvented the whole thing. I reinvented the whole thing so that what would happen is that once the ministry year started again, it would take no work and I could basically do it automatically. And most of it would be, so I'll tell you the type of things that I did. We created a brand new website that all the process would be if people wanted to make a donation or sponsor a child or things like that, that would happen automatically. I wouldn't have to do a bunch of work every time that happened. We, of course, had people, because we have sponsored children, people give to it regularly, and a bunch of people give via direct deposit, because that's cheaper for us, right? You don't have to pay the min fees because no credit cards. And so Pastor Keith liked it that way, and he encouraged people to do it instead of credit cards that way. But I switched that around because here's the problem. That's all manual. I have to do that manual every month now and move those things in. And I would rather pay the dollar in credit card fees and not have to do any work. And so we contacted all of our donors, and we set up an automatic system where they could go in and punch in their credit card, and then everything happened automatically, and then they would have the ability to go in and change their own credit card, because I don't have time to manage this thing. And the other things, of course, is I created a pretty sophisticated spreadsheet so that instead of doing the work every month when I need to get reports to our board, I just click a few buttons, I download the data, put it into the spreadsheet, and it automatically gives the reports. And so I went and spent like 2 months killing myself. And at one point, Pastor Mark came up to me, actually, and he said, Duane, I think you might be spending a little bit too much time. You have another job to do. And I explained to him, I said, I understand. What I'm doing now is I'm investing up front so that I can do my other job for the rest of my life and not do it now. And which he understood and he was great with. So this is the way I did it, and that's the way we're still doing it now. And sometimes I think we need to take time to reevaluate our systems. This is how I think we supercharge our systems. I think we need to take time to reevaluate our systems and what we're doing on somewhat of a regular basis. And I realize that that's subjective, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute. And because I think sometimes there are better tools, there are different ways of doing things. Sometimes things have just changed, and we have processes that we used to do because we used to do this, and it's still our process, and now we're doing all this work, and it doesn't even have any value. And when I was in my first trip to Uganda, that one that I was telling you about that I was struggling with, one of the things that we were doing there is we were helping build a church roof. And so there was this concrete that was getting poured, and we needed rebar pieces that were like a foot long for this part of this concrete pour. And so they gave us hacksaws, and we sat there all day long cutting these little sections of rebar. And I couldn't get out of my head. If I was home in Winnipeg right now, I would grab my angle grinder, and I'd be done this whole thing in 30 minutes. Like, it'd be no big deal, because I would have the better tools, and I'd have the ability to do that. But that's not what I have here. I don't have that option. So now this is taking me days instead of half an hour. But the other thing that was interesting for me when I think about that is I understand that because I know the different tools, but for the people that were there, this is the only way they know how to do it. This is the only way that's at their disposal. They don't have another option. And so, you know, they just keep doing the same thing over and over again because that's what they have and that's what they know. But it doesn't mean it's the best way. And I think we need to be constantly reevaluating. And sometimes we're forced into this and our circumstances change us for us and because there's a problem or something and it forces us to reevaluate. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I actually think that's a good thing. But my question is, why do we want to wait for those problems to arise to be the only times that we reevaluate and change? Wouldn't it make more sense to actually observe some things and try to work on some of them, fix them? And I kind of think that when we do this, it's kind of our systems are kind of like a car. And when I walked in, I saw these things sitting here. I thought, did they set this up for me? But our systems are kind of like a car. And when you first get your car, of course, it's running great and smooth and you're super happy about it. But if you don't maintain it, if you don't do things, sometimes you need to replace some parts or change some things, whatever. And if we don't do that to our systems, then I think we're going to find as time goes on that we're not being as effective or as efficient as we could and should be. And so here's how I would encourage you to do this is to actually take some time and inspect your systems. Look through it. And there's a few ways that I would do that. One is talking to the different people that use it. And this can be a scary one, especially for the ministers, because they don't necessarily want to hear this answer. But you talk to your ministry people and you say, what do you like and hate about what we're currently doing? But that means you have to be willing to hear the answer, just to be clear. And you know, be willing to hear what they're going to say. And what are some of the frustrations? What are some of the things that they find challenging about the system? And maybe you can change some of those things. Maybe you could do it a different way and still accomplish your goal. Because remember, your goal is to serve the ministry, not the other way around. And so you ask people, you have discussions about it, and you know, set up some meetings and you know, it's hard to know how often to do this. And I think every system is different. I'm going to give an arbitrary day of maybe every 5 years. You don't want to do it all the time because that's work too. Now you've just created a bunch of work for nothing. But you know, every 5 years maybe, you know, you take a look and ask some people some questions and what could we do? How could we serve you better? What are you frustrated with about this process? Another thing that you can do is obviously ask outside help. And sometimes it's hard when you are in it to see past your own way of doing things because you've just done it this way and you don't know another way. And so if you ask somebody outside of your setting, hey, what do you think of this? When you look at this, does this make sense to you or does this seem like a gong show? And you ask some other people. And you know, let me just say this for me, I'm actually willing to be a resource to anyone. If you have questions, I'm actually... Here's my challenge, of course, is as I told you, I have an incredibly crazy schedule and a hard time keeping up. And so if you say, hey, can you come and help me figure this all out? I probably can't do that. But I could, you know, you want to throw some questions, I'm happy to answer some questions. And I'm happy to, I will help as much as I can. And you can just email me or call the church here, Duane@churchtherock.ca, if you want my email address. It's Duane. And I'd be happy to help try to, you know, think about things from a different perspective and try to figure these things out. But I think at the end of the day, if you want to supercharge your system, it starts by evaluating the effectiveness of what you're currently doing. Is this accomplishing the goal? And there's sort of two probably main questions that you need to ask when you're doing that. And the main question is do I need this? And that's one of the questions you're going to ask when you're evaluating it, when you're talking to other people, both, you know, in the ministry and in the administrative side, do I need this? And sometimes you're going to discover that what you're currently doing has very little purpose. It maybe had a purpose at one time, but now it doesn't serve that same purpose anymore. And it's just, or sometimes it's just not worth the work and the effort that it goes into it. I'll give you an example. For something that's happening, we're currently in process with, is we're in the middle of changing some of our storage on our network. And we have some of our systems that administrative people kept it all nice and neat and all the file folders are all great and clean. And that part's really easy because we just move it all over. But we have other file folders that are, shall I call it a dog's breakfast? And they're just a mess of things. And the more administrative people, they want to take the time to go through all that and clean it all up and organize it, which I understand because it's messy and they don't like mess. But when I look at that, I go, I understand that, but we're probably never going to access anything in that file folder ever again. It's all old. It's not, why would we invest that amount of time? We don't want to delete it because, you know, maybe we would. So let's just move the whole thing somewhere in an archive folder, somewhere out of the way. And if we ever need it, then we'll go and look through it. But probably we never will. And that would be a waste of time. But administrative people, they go, no, we need this thing all organized. You see what I'm saying? And so we have to ask the question, do I actually need this? Is it worth what I'm going to gain by doing it? And another question that we need to ask, is there another way to do this? Is there another way? Could we do this that's simpler or easier for those that use it and be willing to kind of think outside the box? And I, like I said, I think it's a good idea to look at our systems somewhat regularly and take the time to give it a tune-up and recognize some of the things. And I understand that can be adding more work onto an already busy schedule. I understand that. That's the dilemma that we're probably all in. Every time you choose to do this, you're going, well, okay, what do I have to sacrifice to do that? But because this is about investing in the long game, I think it will pay for it. It's worth it. It's worth taking the time or maybe even choosing to sacrifice something else every so often so that you can re-look at it and invest. And it really is giving your future self a gift. That's what you're doing. When you do this, you're giving your future self a gift. You're helping your organization to become more efficient and to get more things done. And it will improve your life and the life of the other people you work with. And it's going to be a win-win situation. So that's my what I got for you. I'm happy to answer any questions, and then we'll go to lunch. Questions? Yeah.
Yeah. So the administrators.
Oh, 1 second. I think Chuck wants to
check.
All right.
Yeah, it's being recorded.
Okay.
Yeah.
Check. Hey. Okay. Yeah. All right. So the administrative side of things is, like you said, there's some tension between them.
Mm-hmm.
And I find a lot of people would prefer to be in the ministry side of things.
Yeah.
And for anybody who works in behind the scenes, like doing tech, for example, running a live stream camera or doing sound or whatever, I find it's increasingly more difficult to find people to fill those roles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, of course, we shouldn't be afraid to ask for outside help. But often, like, I don't know if this is anyone else's experience, but when I do, helps a little slow to come in those specific areas.
Right.
So how can we, I don't want to make it more attractive than it is. You know, I don't want to blow it up into something it isn't. But how can we entice people and encourage them to be more passionate about serving in those capacities?
Right. Okay, that's a good question. I just want to be clear, I don't think we're perfect at this, just so I'm not claiming any moral superiority here, but I think that part of that answer is to do about finding, valuing each other, valuing, which I think is a bit of that tension that, the tension I think is a healthy tension when there's value for each other, because then you are kind of both wrestling it through, but you understand what the other person's doing, and that's a healthy tension. But many times it's a more unhealthy tension, and it's just frustrated with each other because we don't value each other's need in this equation. And it doesn't work without both. Like, you know, the ministry doesn't work without the people, without the Chucks of the world and these other people that do these things. Now, Chuck is a different example because he never wants to be in front of any camera or anything like that. But without them, we don't function. We have no ministry. It doesn't happen. And so the ministry side of people need to be expressing that and letting the administrative people know that they're valued and that whole process. But on the administration side, they actually need to make sure that the ministry side feels that, you know, we're here to serve you, right? Which is the other concern that happens all the time is the administrative people are kind of like, well, no, you don't. You're not allowed to do it that way. You have to do it my way. And instead of going, listen, I would really like to help you do that, but that's going to be a challenge because of this. And we just dictate things, and so it's the valuing each other that I think we get into trouble. And I think that would help if we really valued if Because we don't function without either of them. So we need them. Yeah. Next question.
So I'm finding that when we have new people come into the office, they lots of times they're coming with new ideas for software we could use for like membership manager or mm-hmm. scheduling and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And where do you, as an administrator, I'm not going to rehaul that
right.
every 5 years. Like I'm just,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
That took me years to
yes.
get in place and to encourage people to use it. So,
yeah.
You said we need to ask people what's working for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's valuable, but how do you invite those new ideas without killing yourself?
Right. And that's a great question. And I think, you know, especially when we're talking about our main databases, that's a way bigger picture than because that's a big deal to change. And so what I'm not suggesting is that you should be, you know, reevaluating whether you use that system or not every 5 years. I'm talking about you should reevaluate how you use it every 5 years. And the 5 years is an arbitrary number, so don't get hung up on the 5 years. Maybe it's 2 years, maybe it's 8 years for you. So I think that would be more what I'm talking about is going, and when you ask people what they don't like about it, you're not saying you can change it. You're going to say, okay, that's helpful input. And then I'm going to go back with my team and we're going to look, could we accommodate those things or could we do this another way that will make it easier for them to get what they want? But that could eventually, I don't want to say that it could lead to a software change, but then that's a whole bigger process and that's going to take a whole nother discussion. And, you know, honestly, you're probably planning that over a year or two, like, and so, yeah. Does that make sense? Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Who else? Yep.
So this might be a request or comment versus a
sure.
situation. So like at the higher levels of leadership, they are probably expected to do less admin because that passes off to an administrative person, right? So at the middle level, so let's say at a youth leader, youth pastor level, mm-hmm. if they're expected to do 20% of the administration for their ministry,
mm-hmm.
what administration would you recommend?
So I'd probably somewhat disagree with that statement, to be honest with you, about higher level. Like I'm part of the senior pastoral team at the church. I'm in the highest level that we can be in our staff, and I'm very involved in the administration. So I think a bit of that picture is what many people believe, actually, and I think that's a bit of the problem because it devalues the administration, and it puts value like the ministry is the important and the administration is not. I know that's not what you're doing, but I'm just saying that concept I actually think can be unhelpful because, and it's more about people's giftings. And so when I was the youth pastor at Church of the Rock, I was very involved in the administration side of things because that's how I'm wired. Now our current youth pastor, and if he was up here, he'd be the first to admit it. He's probably the worst administrator I've ever seen in my entire life. And if he was up here, he would own it. He'd say, "Yep, that's me." And I love him. We're great friends. And so then that's not going to be as much his thing. So it's not about higher or lower. It's more about recognizing your giftings and your settings. And so then because when I was a youth pastor, because I was more administrative, then I did things differently than he would. But because he's not, then we go, okay, that's not his strength. And he's amazing. He's like one of the most amazing relational people I've ever met. And so he needs to focus on doing that. And so he's going to do way less administration. And so we need to figure out a system that accommodates him. And this would be an example, I think, that sometimes churches get into trouble with, is because they would look at that and they go, they're just frustrated that he's not very administrative and get mad at him and demand all kinds of things of him. And instead of looking at going, okay, that's not his strength. So how do we create a system that will let him be him and not make it too burdensome on him? But he does have to step up his game. Like he can't just do whatever he wants. Like things matter because it costs other people. And so, but as the administration, we need to go, hey, we serve that ministry. And it doesn't matter where they're ranked in the church. It's about we go, okay, how do we accommodate? How do we help somebody who's not as gifted in that? Does that make sense? Yeah, absolutely.
So in your opinion, then different ministries, because of the different leaders, could have a different level of administration applied to that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And because you want to be wired, you want to, you based on your gifting of who you have, and it does, everybody needs to up their game. So if I'm, you know, like I said, I'm kind of in both camps, and I personally see myself as I'm not like the super administrator, and I'm also not the super minister guy. I'm a little bit of both is where I am, and there are people better at me in both of these things. But if I'm this guy that's super relational, that's not an excuse for me not to do any administrative stuff. Like, I need to up my game. But if I'm like the super administrator, that's not an excuse for me to not be willing to up my game on the ministry side. And remember, I have to serve them and stuff. Like, we serve each other. We're doing this together. We're a team. And we don't actually function unless we do this well together. And so this is not a, even that, the whole hierarchy thing, that's not really a biblical concept. This hierarchy thing and you know, well, the administrators, you know, I understand there's server and leading, and that's true, but it's not a hierarchy. One's not more important than the other or more valued than the other. That's our culture, and it's a terrible part of our culture, that we assign value to roles. That is actually not a biblical concept. So, yeah. Questions? Yeah.
Just piggybacking on I think what you said, do you encourage professional development then? Like, if someone's weak in administrative, do you encourage them to take administrative courses or be mentored by someone, so that that administrative side of their gifting grows? How do you balance that?
Yeah, once again, I wouldn't say that we're perfect on this, but I think our goal would be yes. And when I don't know that we have pursued it very much. We have at times, but when people ask us, hey, I want to do this, our answer is almost always, yeah, we'd love to empower you to take this course or do this thing. And so we should absolutely do that. You know, how much you incur, part of it, that becomes time too, right? that's the battle that you know, there's this, you only have so much time. But I think that's great, and you should. And for sure, absolutely give people opportunity to try different things, you know, learn, take conferences in. Yeah.
So you were mentioning too about how you can get so busy and find it hard to keep on top of things. Mm-hmm. That's where lots of times we're encouraged to get a volunteer. Mm-hmm. And so it's working really good. I don't know. As an administrator, you just kind of see people that are administrative. Like, you gravitate towards those people that are kind of like you.
Absolutely.
And so you see that mind at work and say, hey, do you have a few hours to come into the office each week? And so I actually have two volunteers right now that come into the office for different purposes, which frees me up for some of that stuff that just never gets done.
Absolutely.
Right?
I'm in the same boat. I do the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, when you can get a volunteer to do something, you absolutely should.
I guess my question would be probably to you. If you are non-administrative, how do you find people that are?
Yeah. you know, that is the challenging part. I guess I'd say this. I fundamentally believe that God always provides everything we need to do what he's called us to do. That doesn't mean I've always felt that. I'm just being clear. It's not like I'm always going, oh yeah, God's taking care of everything. No, that's a tension that I deal with. But I fundamentally believe that God has put the people in your setting to do what he's called you to do. And so that means they're there. And I'd probably start by trying to cast vision for that and valuing it. It's probably what I would do. And you allow people to understand how important that is and how valuable that is. I recently did a thing, because I'm at the Niverville campus, and one of the things that we do as Church of the Rock every year, we do a ministry expo, and we just highlight the different ministries and highlight the different needs so that people can We can try to find people that are could volunteer in areas. And many times, you know, it's not like it's a magic pill. I wish it was, but it's not. But many times we discover people that we would have never discovered any other way because we wouldn't have thought to ask them. We don't know what their hidden talents are or different things. But when I did this recently in Niverville just a few weeks ago, what I did is I talked about, well, let me back up. One of the things that I actually think is an unhealthy way of recruiting is the beating people over the head technique and guilting them and saying, hey, you're not, you know what, you're not carrying your part. You need to carry your part. Now, do I believe that everyone needs to carry their part? Yeah, I absolutely do. Like, I'm not disagreeing with that. I just don't think that's helpful to engage people. And so what I did is I talked about the passage where he talks about the different parts of the body and how we all have a different part to play, and if the hand can't say to the foot, I don't need you, or the eye can't say, whatever, I'm getting that wrong, but you know what verse I'm talking about. And so I talked about that with our congregation in Niverville, and I explained to them, I said, you know, what you're not going to hear from me is me trying to convince you to fit into a role that you don't fit in. I believe that if you are here, then you are a part of this body and you have a part to play in this body. And you are actually not filling your potential, and it actually affects us all. And we need to help each other find each other's place in this church. And so I would encourage you to try to figure out who you are in this body. And I personally believe that, you know, now that we're going to find the people that we need to do what we need to do. And that, now that doesn't mean, do we still have shortcomings in our campus in Niverville? We absolutely do. And so we deal with it. But people did come out that we didn't know. And so I think it's casting vision. I think sometimes we have to be patient enough too. Some of this takes creating a DNA that takes months and years to create. And we kind of go, okay, but I have this need now, and I put the call out, and nobody comes, and then we go, oh, they didn't come. Now what are we going to do? And I understand that because we have real issues. But I think this is once again about the long game and actually about going, all right, I'm not going to get discouraged by that. I'm going to just continue to build this up and create a culture and a DNA where this is who we are and what we do, and everybody has a part to play. And you suffer and I suffer when you're not playing your part and I'm not playing my part. So.
About that is that sometimes the volunteers don't rise, mm-hmm. and the load is there. And I think it's then you dig deeper for the grace of God to help carry until such a season as yep. when the volunteers do arise. And you just keep casting the vision, just keep presenting as much mm-hmm. as best as you can, and shoulder tapping and talking to people and encouraging others that, hey, you know, I think this could be something you could really do well at, and
yeah.
and without guilting them, like it's been said. But yeah, just sometimes the season you go through, and like I know, as we're coming out of COVID, we, you know, I even like just come back this fall and we went to two services, and then all of a sudden, oh, where are our volunteers? And we're just walking skeletons, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think part of that too is sometimes you choose to go, all right, if I don't have enough to do this, then maybe I don't do this. Like, you know, that's not always an option. I understand. We still have to do church. Like, we can't not do church. But there are things that we maybe feel like we absolutely need that maybe we don't actually. And we could just put it on hold, or like, it's not worth killing ourselves to do this thing that maybe you could live without for a season. We have time for probably one last question. Yep.
Any tips on when you come to evaluate new technology or software, or whether you should make a shift? There's so much out there that how do you know which is the best database to go right. and all that kind of stuff?
That one, honestly, it's about finding the right person to help you is a big part of it, because there's not one way to do it. And it's way more helpful if you can have someone that understands that their brain thinks that way. And it's a bit of a unique skill set, because it's not just administrative, but they also have to be somewhat nerdy and techy and understand those things. And so I think it's the most helpful if you can find someone to help you with it. But if you don't have that, then I would say you call, you talk to other people who are using them. And so, which is what we've done many times, is when we've considered a different software, I find out, well, who else is using this? And then I find out how they're using it and what are they doing. And so that would be probably how I'd do that.
So if you were starting from scratch everything today with the size of place, tell us the top three systems you would do or use that you would just jump to right now.
Okay. Wow. I thought you were my friend, Dallas. You know, I don't know if I could say the top three. But, well, it depends on how you look at three. The one I'm the most interested in is Planning Center. We don't use it for everything right now at the church. I use it for everything for World Focus, and all our giving and stuff goes through it. And I'll tell you the reason I like it, it's simple. It's not complicated. You don't need to be super smart database-wise and things like that. And they have a module for everything. It's designed for churches, and it's also affordable. It's not a fortune. It has some limitations because, for example, in our giving, I use it for World Focus for our sponsorship for all our giving. And it's beautiful in the fact that it's all automatic. People can change their own things, all that stuff. The downside to it is I need to create a separate fund for every child so I track how much money came in for every child. So I have this list of funds that's, 130 funds long. And because Planning Center tries to keep things simple, what they don't do is they don't have sub-funds. They don't have sub-categories. And so it's one big list, which is a bit of a challenge to manage. It's a challenge when you're first setting it up, but then once it's set up, it's no big deal because you don't touch it every day. But then every time you need to make a change, every time you do, it's sort of back to that challenge again. So that's going to be the holdup for us. Like if we were to consider switching at Church of the Rock to that, we have hundreds of funds. And so we're kind of trying to figure out how we would do that. But when I was at a conference in Florida where Planning Center was there, and I asked him that question, and he said that lots of churches just don't do it that way, and they do their funds through their accounting software instead. And so that's the question that I'm going to be going, all right, how would we do that? And that's we're not there yet, but that's one of the questions we're going to be asking. Is there another way to do it? Is there a way we could go, all right, we've always done it this way, but if we went to Planning Center, a whole bunch of these other things would be simpler. So is there a compromise, or is there a way we could do it, another way to accomplish our goal and use this software instead? But I can't give you that answer yet because we haven't started that journey. That's the journey that we're about to start. Yeah. What percentage of churches use Planning Center? I don't know, but a lot. More and more, because there's software that I also saw when I was at that conference about doing communication with people and being able to automatically send texts and all that kind of stuff. And almost every church software that I've seen now, like that and other ones, they all integrate with Planning Center. And so if they're investing the time to make sure that integrates well with Planning Center, that means Planning Center is a pretty major player because they wouldn't do that. And the other thing I like about Planning Center versus what we're currently using, we currently use Fellowship One, is it's way more locked down, like how Planning Center makes easy access for doing some stuff. I'm going to vent here for a second. You can like it or not. When I look at Planning Center, their mission is to serve the church, and so they're trying to do, and they don't do everything right, and I'm frustrated with one thing that they're doing right now too, but their mission is to serve, and they're trying to make this thing more and more accessible, and they keep it affordable and cheap and all that kind of stuff. Whereas when I look at some of the bigger things like Fellowship One, it feels like more I'm serving them. This is back to that, do you serve me or do I serve you? And it feels, you will say, hey, this doesn't work well, and we might get back to you in 6 months and probably still tell you, yeah, sorry, we're not prepared to do that. Whereas Planning Center, you send a message, you got a message back in an hour. And so I like their heart and their ministry and their desires. Sure, we got 1 minute.
Planning Center, once you put it in the database, can you pull out, is it flexible? That's one of my questions about it, is if we, with different ministries, which you all have there, all have in your own places. Once you get the information in, can you get it out in a plethora of ways, or is it pretty packaged in how you get?
No,
to your...
You can. First of all, they have all kinds of modules for the different things, right? So if you want it for your kids ministry, they have a kids module. If you want it for your giving, you have a giving module. If you want it for your database, that comes with all of them, the people module. But that's how I do with World Focus, because I have to do complicated reports. I just export all the data into a spreadsheet, and then I have all these pivot tables and stuff that create the whole thing. So there's lots of easy ways to export the data. They try to do that. All right, we're out of time, and it's lunchtime. So thanks, everyone, and we'll see you around.
Pray for us.
Pray for us, sure. Yeah, okay, well, Lord, I thank you. I thank you, Lord God, that that you actually want to do us well. You have actually put people around us to help us in these things. And Lord, I ask that you would give us real wisdom and discernment, Lord, where we're going to get caught because we just only know one way. Lord, would you help us to see those traps, and would you help us to recognize the ineffectiveness of some of those things? And Lord, where there is tension that's unhealthy, Lord, we ask that you would deal with that, and you would create just a real healthy balance and an understanding and a valuing of each other. And Lord, I just commit this whole thing to you. And Lord, I ask for everyone in this room and actually everyone in this conference, Lord God, that you would help us to really supercharge our systems in a significant way. In Jesus' name, amen. Yep.